A Brief History of the Holy Roman Empire. The First Crusade, Part 6, The Siege of Jerusalem. It was not until January of 1099 that the Crusaders embarked for Jerusalem. Bohemond and Baldwin were not with them, for they had abandoned the cause to make money. One might have hoped that the remaining nobles, who were indeed more chivalrous than the aforementioned two, would then have left a noble mark upon history. But in the absence of a true spiritual leadership and the bitterness of the past few years, the hope of seeing their dreams fulfilled before the walls of Jerusalem filled them with thoughts of Joshua's conquest. In the day of Joshua, because human sacrifice was practiced by the old inhabitants as well as other reasons, not even women and children were spared. For the Crusaders, with a few exceptions, there was a new conquest commissioned by God against the heathen. To be sure, they were still noble, chivalrous warriors who put their own life on the line to protect the innocent, but the majority were filled with Viking fervor. The conquest of Jerusalem ensured not only the establishment of a Latin state in Palestine, but also its fall. The Christians who had once viewed the Crusaders as liberators would soon distrust them. The siege was to be a testament to the change that occurred in history. The innocence of the Holy Roman Empire, and it was innocent compared to the barbarian culture they emerged from, was now over. The barbarians had once become Christians. Now these Christians became barbarians all over again. The journey from Antioch to Jerusalem lasted about 5 months, during which time more bitterness and infighting occurred. The prophecies and dreams of Peter Bartholomew were now declared to be frauds by his critics, and Bartholomew agreed to undertake a trial by fire to prove his innocence. In this pagan tradition, incorporated into Christian European theology, one could only survive if his heart was true and pure. So Bartholomew ran through the blazing fire with the holy lance in his hand. He survived the initial test, but the fire had done its damage. He lingered on until finally dying days later. When the Crusaders reached Bethlehem, they were greeted with cheers as the crowd even kissed the feet of many Crusaders. Such was the condition of the Holy Land under Turk rule. So severe had it been that even Muslims despised the Turks. This fact, however, was not necessarily into the Crusaders' hands, for the Egyptian Fatimids also hated the Turks and likewise had designs on Jerusalem. But while the Crusaders had been delayed at Antioch, the Fatimids had gained possession of Jerusalem and instituted a moderate government. The Egyptians had even negotiated with both the Byzantine and the Crusaders in hopes of reaching an agreement on the parceling of Turkish lands, but both sides demanded Jerusalem for their own. When the Crusaders finally arrived at the gates of Jerusalem in June of 1099, it was the moderate Fatimids that they were besieging, not the Turks. The Fatimids were not as cruel as the Turks, but when they had taken possession of Jerusalem, they exiled every Christian in the city. This only inspired the Crusaders and reinforced the idea that the siege was a war against heathenism. They immediately began the siege and soon found that they would be unable to penetrate the mighty defenses of Jerusalem without siege equipment. Despite attempts by the Egyptians to blockade English and Byzantine fleets, several ships slipped through the blockade and landed at Joppa. There, the siege materials were delivered only about a week after their arrival. A huge castle tower was built with a huge cross on it and placed on wheels. It was armed with catapults and was so tall that men could jump over the enemy walls. In July, a priest named Peter Desiderius declared that the Bishop of Lisieux, whom the whole army had revered, appeared to him in a dream and promised victory in 9 days. That is, if they would march around the walls of Jerusalem in bare feet while fasting with repentant hearts. The army agreed to undertake this, and did so to the mocking of the Muslim soldiers jeering with laughter. 9 days later, the prophecy would be fulfilled. At night on July the 3rd, the Crusaders, now numbering only 13,000 men, began to shovel dirt into the trenches that surrounded the walls so that the towers and scaling ladders could be used. Boulders and boiling oil were poured over the walls, but the Crusaders protected themselves as best they could. On the morning of the 14th, 9 days after the march around the walls, the Crusaders began to pour into Jerusalem. Much space has been devoted to the savagery of the Crusaders which followed, but the chivalry of some of the soldiers and knights should not be scorned. The onslaught which occurred was not orchestrated by the leaders of the crusade, but by a wanton mob made up of mercenaries over which most of the princes had lost control. Memories of the unthinkable savagery of the Turks beat the crusading mobs into a frenzy. The Muslims and Jews alike were slaughtered in the streets regardless of their age or sex. Of the butchers, the Tafur were the most notable. They may have been survivors of Peter the Hermit's peasant crusade or some other group that had no armor and were penniless. They fought like wild animals and were so savage that the knights secretly despised them. They had been guilty of cannibalism during the Crusades and were the predominant butchers in Jerusalem. Of their leader, Godfrey, and the other knights once commented, "All of us together cannot tame the King Tafur." Despite the terrible testament of the Crusading, there is no evidence that the leaders of the Crusade played a direct role in the atrocities. Godfrey cannot be shown to have been involved at all, and Raymond, for a price of gold, ensured the safety of several of the leaders of the Muslims, escorting them out of the city personally. So also Tancred showed chivalry, free of charge. He had trapped many Muslims in a mosque, and when they surrendered to him, he took them under his protection and promised over 200 that they would not be harmed. But such nobility was not to be found in the hearts of those crusaders who had survived the long journey. Bitterness at their plight, angered at the persecution of their brethren, feeling that this was a war against heathenism, and the darkness of the human heart inspired many of the crusaders to spare neither women nor children. These men forced their way past Tancred and his men, willing to fight even their Christian brothers for the right to strike down the heathen. Muslims in mosques were murdered. Tancred's cries were of no avail. Even the Jews were not spared. When the Muslims expelled all the Christians from Jerusalem, the Jews remained. They were viewed as traitors who cooperated with the Muslims in their persecution of the believers. Many Jews had taken refuge in a synagogue and were placed under the protection of Tancred. But the mobs, probably Tafur mercenaries, ignored Tancred's banner, symbol of his authority, and showing that those were under it could not be harmed, and the Jews were burnt alive in the synagogue. Exaggerations of the slaughter have occurred, claim that the blood and the bodies piled up to a horse's bridle, a phrase borrowed from Revelation's prophecy of Armageddon, and suggest, with some legitimacy, that their armor was covered in blood from head to foot. The savagery is said to have prevented the West from ever gaining the trust of Muslim peasants, whose support was essential in establishing a long-lasting state. For the time being, Jerusalem and the Holy Land belonged to the Holy Roman Empire, but the events of July 14th would ensure it would not remain part of the empire. Even the best of the Latin kings of Jerusalem found it impossible to erase the memory of the butchery, and it was this carnage that inspired Muslims to drive the Christians from the land with even greater zeal than the Crusaders had shown in taking the land. It seems almost prophetic that within weeks of the capture of Jerusalem, Pope Urban II would die. He did not even live to hear the news. Even more, the majority of those who had been crucial to the Crusades would die within a few years. Urban died 15 days after the fall of Jerusalem. Godfrey would become the first king of Jerusalem, but died 5 days after the first anniversary of the city's fall. The Bishop Lepew had died before Jerusalem had even fallen, and many of the others faded from the pages of history shortly thereafter. The Crusaders typified the High Middle Ages, which they may sometimes be considered to have inaugurated. It's a mixture of the greatest of nobility with the vilest of barbarity. It was a time of honor and savagery, of gallantry and atrocity. It was the beginning of the late Middle Ages. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.